Chapter 46. A Message Out of the Shadow. Even as he returned to the inner city on foot, Matt was far from certain that what he intended would actually work. It would, if what he had been told was true. But it was the truth of that he was not sure of. He avoided the oval plaza in front of the palace, but wandered around the sides of the huge structure and its grounds, along streets that curved with the contours of the hills. The golden domes of the palace glittered, mockingly out of reach. He had made his way almost all the way around, nearly back to the plaza, when he saw it. A steep slope, thick with low flowers, rising from the street to a white wall of rough stone. Some leafy tree limbs stuck over the top of the wall, and he could see the tops of others beyond, in a garden of the royal palace. A wall made to look like a cliff, he thought, and a garden on the other side. Maybe Rand was telling the truth. A casual look both ways showed him he had the curving street to himself for the moment. He would have to hurry. The curves did not allow him to see very far. Someone could come along any moment. He scrambled up the slope on all fours, careless of how his boots ripped holes in the banks of red and white blossoms. The rough stone of the wall gave plenty of finger holds, and ridges and knobs provided toe holds even for a man in boots. Careless of them to make it so easy, he thought as he climbed. For a moment the climbing took him back home with Rand and Perrin to a journey they had made beyond the sand hills into the edge of the mountains of mist. When they returned to Emmons Field, they had all caught the fury from everyone who could lay hands on them, him worst of all. Everyone assumed it had been his idea. But for 3 days they had climbed the cliffs and slept under the sky and eaten eggs filched from Redcrest's nests, and plump gray-winged grouse fetched with an arrow, or a stone from a sling, and rabbits caught with snares, all the while laughing about how they were not afraid of the mountain's bad luck, and how they might find a treasure. He had brought home an odd rock from that expedition, with the skull of a good-sized fish somehow pressed into it, and a long white tail feather dropped by a snow eagle, and a piece of white stone as big as his hand that looked almost as if it had been carved into a man's ear. He thought it looked like an ear, even if Rand and Perrin did not. And Tamil Thor had said it might be. His fingers slipped out of a shallow groove, his balance shifted, and he lost the toehold under his left foot. With a gasp, he barely caught hold of the top of the wall and pulled himself up the rest of the way. For a moment he lay there, breathing hard. It would not have been that long a fall, but enough to break his head. Fool, letting my mind wander like that. Nearly killed myself in those cliffs that way. That was all a long time ago. His mother had likely thrown all those things out already, anyway. With one last look each way to make sure no one had seen him, the curving length of street below was still empty. He dropped inside the palace grounds. It was a large garden with flagstoned walks through expanses of grass among the trees, and grapevines thick on arbors over the walks. And everywhere, flowers. White blossoms covering the pear trees, and white and pink dotting the apple trees. Roses in every color, and bright golden sunburst, and purple Emmons glory, and many he could not identify. Some he was not sure could be real. One had odd blossoms in scarlet and gold that looked almost like birds, and another seemed no different from a sunflower, except that its yellow flowers were 2 feet and more across, and stood on stalks as tall as an ogier. Boots crunched on flagstone, and he crouched low behind a bush against the wall as 2 guardsmen marched past, their long white collars hanging over their breastplates. They never glanced his way, and he grinned to himself. Luck. With just a little luck, they'll never see me till I hand the bloody thing to Morgays. He slipped through the garden like a shadow, as if stalking rabbits, freezing by a bush or hard against a tree trunk when he heard boots. 2 more pairs of soldiers strode by along the paths, the second close enough for him to have taken 2 steps and goosed them. As they vanished among the flowers and trees, he plucked a deep red star blaze and stuck the wavy-petaled flower in his hair with a grin. This was as much fun as stealing apple cakes at Sunday, and easier. Women always kept a sharp watch on their baking. The fool soldiers never took their eyes off the flagstones. It was not long before he found himself against the white wall of the palace itself, and began sliding along it behind a row of flowering white roses on slatted frames, searching for a door. There were plenty of wide arched windows just over his head, but he thought it might be a bit harder to explain being found climbing in through a window than walking down a hall. Two more soldiers appeared, and he froze. They would pass within 3 paces of him. He could hear voices from the window over his head, 2 men, just loud enough for him to make out the words.
"On their way to Tyr, great master."
The man sounded frightened and obsequious.
"Let them ruin his plans if they can."
The voice was deeper and stronger, a man used to command.
"It will serve him right if 3 untrained girls can foil him. He was always a fool, and he is still a fool. Is there any word of the boy? He is the one who can destroy us all."
"No, great master. He has vanished. But, great master, one of the girls is Morgaze's nit."
Matt half turned, then caught himself. The soldiers were coming closer. They did not appear to have seen his start through the thickly woven rose stems.
"Move, you fools. Get by so I can see who this man bloody is."
He had lost some of the conversation.
"Has been far too impatient since regaining his freedom," the deep voice was saying. "He never realized the best plans take time to mature. He wants the world in a day and Kalandor besides. The great lord take him. He may seize the girl and try to make some use of her. And that might strain my own plans."
"As you say, great master. Shall I order her brought out of Tyr?"
"No. The fool would take it as a move against him if he knew. And who can say what he chooses to watch aside from the sword? See that she dies quietly, Komar. Let her death attract no notice at all."
His laughter was a rich rumble.
"Those ignorant slatterns in that tower will have a difficult time producing her after this disappearance. This may all be just as well. Let it be done quickly. Quickly, before he has time to take her himself."
The 2 soldiers were almost abreast of him. Matt tried to will their feet to move faster.
"Great master," the other man said uncertainly, "that may be difficult. We know she is on her way to Tyr, but the vessel she traveled on was found at Arangil, and all 3 of them had left it earlier. We do not know whether she has taken another ship or is riding south. And it may not be easy to find her once she reaches Tyr, great master. Perhaps if you—"
"Are there none but fools in the world now?"
the deep voice said harshly.
"Do you think I could move in Tyr without him knowing? I do not mean to fight him. Not now, not yet. Bring me the girl's head, Komar. Bring me all 3 heads, or you will pray for me to take yours."
"Yes, great master. It shall be as you say. Yes, yes."
The soldiers crunched past, never looking to either side. Matt only waited for their backs to pass before leaping up to catch the broad stone windowsill and pull himself high enough to see through the window. He barely noticed the fringed Tarabon carpet on the floor, worth a fat purse of silver. One of the broad carved doors was swinging shut. A tall man with wide shoulders and a deep chest straining the green silk of his silver embroidered coat was staring at the door with dark blue eyes. His black beard was close cut, with a streak of white over his chin. All in all, he looked a hard man, and one used to giving orders.
"Yes, great master,"
he said suddenly, and Matt almost lost his grip on the sill. He had thought this must be the man with the deep voice, but it was the cringing voice he heard. Not cringing now, but still the same.
"It shall be as you say, great master," the man said bitterly. "I will cut the 3 wenches' heads off myself as soon as I can find them."
He strode through the door, and Matt let himself back down. For a moment he crouched there behind the rose frames. Someone in the palace wanted Elaine dead, and had thrown in Egwene and Nynaeve as afterthoughts.
What under the light are they doing, going to Tyr?
It had to be them. He pulled the daughter heir's letter out of the lining of his coat and frowned at it. Maybe, with this in his hand, Morgaze would believe him. He could describe one of the men. But the time for skulking was past. The big fellow could be off to Tyr before he even found Morgaze, and whatever she did then,
There was no guarantee it could stop him. Taking a deep breath, Matt wiggled between two of the rose frames at the cost of only a few prickles and snags from the thorns, and started down the flagstone path after the soldiers. He held Elaine's letter out in front of him so the golden lily seal was plainly visible, and went over in his mind exactly what he meant to say. When he had been sneaking about, guardsmen kept popping up like mushrooms after rain, but now he walked almost the length of the garden without seeing even one. He passed several doors. It would not be so good to enter the palace without permission. The guards might do nasty things first and listen after. But he was beginning to think about going through a door when it opened and a helmetless young officer with one golden knot on his shoulder strode out. The man's hand immediately went to his sword hilt, and he had a foot of steel bared before Matt could push the letter toward him.
"Elaine, the daughter heir, sends this letter to her mother, Queen Morgaise, Captain."
He held the letter so the lily seal was prominent. The officer's dark eyes flickered to either side as if searching for other people, without really ever leaving Matt.
"How did you come into this garden?"
He did not draw a sword further, but he did not sheathe it either.
"Elber is on the main gates. He's a fool, but he would never let anyone wander loose into the palace."
"A fat man with eyes like a rat?" Matt cursed his tongue, but the officer gave a sharp nod. He almost smiled, too, but it did not seem to lessen his vigilance or his suspicion. He grew angry when he learned I had come from Tarvalin, and he wouldn't even give me a chance to show the letter or mention the daughter heir's name. He said he would arrest me if I did not go, so I climbed the wall. I promised I would deliver this to Queen Morgaise herself, you see, Captain. I promised it, and I always keep my promises. You see the seal?"
"That bloody garden wall again," the officer muttered. "It should be built 3 times so high."
He eyed Matt.
"Guardsman Lieutenant, not Captain." "I am Guardsman Lieutenant Tollenvor. I recognize the daughter heir's seal."
His sword finally slid all the way back into the sheath. He stretched out a hand, not his sword hand.
"Give me the letter, and I will take it to the queen, after I show you out. Some would not be so gentle at finding you walking about loose."
"I promised to put it in her hands myself," Matt said. Light, I never thought they would not let me give it to her.
"I did promise, to the daughter heir."
Matt hardly realized Tollenvor's hand was moving before the officer's sword was resting against his neck.
"I will take you to the queen, countryman," Tollenvor said softly. "But know that I can take your head before you blink if you so much as think of harming her."
Matt put on his best grin. That slightly curved blade felt sharp on the side of his neck.
"I am a loyal Anderman," he said, "and a faithful subject of the queen, the Light Illuminer. Why, if I had been here during the winter, I'd have followed Lord Gabriel for sure."
Tollenvor gave him a tight-mouthed stare, then finally took his sword away. Matt swallowed and stopped himself from touching his throat to see if he had been cut.
"Take the flower out of your hair," Tollenvor said, as he sheathed his blade. "Do you think you came here courting?"
Matt snatched the starblaze blossom out of his hair and followed the officer.
"Bloody fool, putting a flower in my hair. I have to stop playing the fool now."
It was not so much following, really, for Tollenvor kept an eye on him even while he led the way. The result was an odd sort of procession, with the officer to one side of him and ahead, but half turned in case Matt tried anything. For his part, Matt attempted to look as innocent as a babe splashing in his bathwater. The colorful tapestries on the wall had earned their weaver's silver, and so had the rugs on the white tile floors, even here in the halls. Gold and silver stood everywhere, plates and platters, bowls and cups, on chests and low cabinets of polished wood, as fine as anything he had seen in the tower. Servants darted everywhere, in red livery, with white collars and cuffs, and the white line of Andor on their breasts. He found himself wondering if Morgaise played at dice.
Wool-headed thought. Queens don't toss dice.
But when I give her this letter and tell her somebody in her palace means to kill Elaine, I'll wager she gives me a fat purse. He indulged himself in a small fancy of being made a lord. Surely the man who revealed a plot to murder the daughter heir could expect some such reward. Tollenvor led him down so many corridors and across so many courtyards that he was beginning to wonder if he could find his way out again without help. when suddenly one of the courts had more than servants in it. A columned walk surrounded the court, with a round pool in the middle, with white and yellow fish swimming beneath lily pads and floating white water lilies. Men in colorful coats embroidered in gold or silver, women with wide dresses, worked even more elaborately, stood attendance on a woman with red-gold hair who sat on the raised rim of the pool, trailing her fingers in the water and staring sadly at the fish that rose to her fingertips in hopes of food. A great serpent ring encircled the third finger of her left hand. A tall, dark man stood at her shoulder, the red silk of his coat almost hidden by the gold leaves and scrolls worked on it. But it was the woman who held Matt's eye. He did not need the wreath of finely made golden roses in her hair, or the stole hanging over her dress of white slashed with red, the red length of the stole embroidered with the lines of Andor, to know he was looking at Morgaze, by the grace of the light, Queen of Andor, defender of the realm, protector of the people, high seat of House Trachand. She had Elaine's face and beauty, but it was what Elaine would have when she had ripened. Every other woman in the courtyard faded into the background by her very presence. I'd dance a jig with her and steal a kiss in the moonlight, too, no matter how old she is. He shook himself. Remember exactly who she is. Talonvor went to one knee, a fist pressed to the white stone of the courtyard. My queen, I bring a messenger who bears a letter from the Lady Elaine. Matt eyed the man's posture, then contented himself with a deep bow. From the daughter heir, my queen. He held out the letter as he bowed, so the golden-yellow wax of the seal was visible. Once she reads it and knows Elaine is all right, I will tell her. Morgaze turned her deep blue eyes on him. Light. As soon as she's in a good mood. You bring a letter from my scapegrace child? Her voice was cold, but with an edge that spoke of heat ready to rise. That must mean she is alive, at least. Where is she? In Tarvalon, my queen, he managed to get out. Light, wouldn't I like to see a staring match between her and the Amarlin? On second thought, he decided he would rather not. At least she was when I left. Morgaze waved a hand impatiently, and Talonvor rose to take the letter from Matt and hand it to her. For a moment she frowned at the lily seal, then broke it with a sharp twist of her wrists. She murmured to herself as she read, shaking her head at every other line. She can say no more, can she? She muttered. We shall see whether she holds to that. Abruptly her face brightened. Gabriel, she has been raised to the accepted. Less than a year in the tower and raised already. The smile went as suddenly as it had come, and her mouth tightened. When I put my hands on the wretched child, she will wish she were still a novice. Light, Matt thought. Will nothing put her in a good mood? He decided he was just going to have to say it out, but he wished she did not look as if she meant to cut someone's head off. My queen, by chance I overheard.
Be silent, boy, the dark man in the golden-crusted coat said calmly.
He was a handsome man, almost as good-looking as Galad, and nearly as youthful-seeming, despite the white streaking his temples. But built on a bigger scale, with more than Rand's height, and very nearly Perrin's shoulders.
We will hear what you have to say in a moment.
He reached over Morgaze's shoulder and plucked the letter out of her hand. Her glare turned on him. Matt could see her temper heating, but the dark man laid a strong hand on her shoulder, never taking his eyes off what he was reading, and Morgaze's anger melted.
It seems she has left the tower again, he said, on the service of the Amarlin seat. The woman oversteps herself again, Morgaze.
Matt had no trouble holding his tongue. Luck. It was stuck to the roof of his mouth. Sometimes I don't know if it's good or bad. The dark man was the owner of the deep voice, the great master, who wanted Elaine's head. She called him Gabriel. Her advisor wants to murder Elaine? Light! And Morgaze was staring up at him like an adoring dog with her master's hand on her shoulder. Gabriel turned nearly black eyes on Matt. The man had a forceful gaze and a look of knowing.
What can you tell us of this boy?
Nothing, my lord.
Matt cleared his throat. The man's stare was worse than the Amarlin's.
I went to Tarvalen to see my sister. She's a novice, Els Grinwell. I'm Tom Grinwell, my lord. The Lady Elaine learned I was meaning to see Camelin on my way back home. I'm from Comfrey, my lord, a little village north of Berlon. I'd never seen any place bigger than Berlon before I went to Tarvalen. And she, the Lady Elaine, I mean, gave me that letter to bring.
He thought Morgaze had glanced at him when he said he came from north of Berlon, but he knew there was a village called Comfrey there. He remembered hearing it mentioned. Gabriel nodded, but he said,
"Do you know where Elaine was going, boy? Or on what business? Speak the truth, and you have nothing to fear. Lie, and you will be put to the question."
Matt did not have to pretend a worried frown.
"My lord, I only saw the daughter heir the once. She gave me the letter, and a gold mark, and told me to bring it to the queen. I know no more of what is in it than I've heard here."
Gabriel appeared to consider it, with no sign on that dark face of whether he believed a word or not.
"No, Gabriel," Morgaze said suddenly. "Too many have been put to the question. I can see the need, as you have shown it to me, but not for this. Not a boy who only brought a letter whose contents he does not know."
"As my queen commands, so shall it be," the dark man said.
The tone was respectful, but he touched her cheek in a way that made color come to her face, and her lips part as if she expected a kiss. Morgaze drew an unsteady breath.
"Tell me, Tom Grinwell, did my daughter look well when you saw her?"
"Yes, my queen. She smiled and laughed and showed a saucy tongue.
Morgaze laughed softly at the look on his face.
"Do not be afraid, young man. Elaine does have a saucy tongue, far too often for her own good. I am happy she is well."
Those blue eyes studied him deeply.
"A young man who has left his small village often finds it difficult to return to it. I think you will travel far before you see Comfrey again. Perhaps you will even return to Tarvalen. If you do, and if you see my daughter, tell her that what is said in anger is often repented. I will not remove her from the White Tower before time. Tell her that I often think of my own time there and miss the quiet talks with Shiriam in her study. Tell her that I said that, Tom Grinwell."
Matt shrugged uncomfortably. "Yes, my queen, but, I do not mean to go to Tarvalen again. Once in any man's life is enough. My da needs me to help work the farm. My sisters will be stuck with the milking with me gone."
Gabriel laughed, a deep rumble of amusement.
"Are you anxious, then, to milk cows, boy? Perhaps you should see something of the world before it changes. Here."
He produced a purse and tossed it. Matt felt coins through the wash leather when he caught it.
"If Elaine can give you a gold mark for carrying her letter, I will give you 10 for bringing it safely. See the world before you go back to your cows."
"Yes, my lord."
Matt lifted the purse and managed a weak grin.
"Thank you, my lord."
But the dark man had already waved him away and turned to Morgaze with his fists on her hips.
"I think the time has come, Morgaze, to lance that festering sore on the border of Andor. By your marriage to Tarengale Damodred, you have a claim to the Sun Throne. The Queen's guards can make that claim as strong as any. Perhaps I can even aid them in some small way. Hear me."
Talonvor touched Matt on the arm, and they backed away, bowing. Matt did not think anyone noticed. Gabriel was still speaking, and every lord and lady seemed to hang on his words. Morgaze was frowning as she listened, yet she nodded as much as any other.